Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
Live from the land that freedom forgot, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Welcome to it.
Welcome. Show 676. Real quick recap. The phenomenal response we've gotten from Sandy Hickerson being on the show last week. And it's amazing, Sandy, our heavy hitter series that we're showcasing people that are basically in the shadows. They're not out there on the social media. They're not out there with the podcast like I am, you know, out here. And you have someone like her who's committed so much of her life and her time. Everybody was blown away. I've gotten so many emails and messages, and you'll see the messages on social media. They're like, oh my God, Sandy, we had no idea. Thank you for what you do. So Sandy Hickerson, unbelievable. And, you know, we have this list of all these 2A heavy hitters that we're trying to bring to light. And we have another heavy hitter that's been on my list. And we finally got the coordination schedule down, and he's going to be on the show today. And him and I go way back, well over 15 years. And Gun for Hire and myself, we've been referring people to him forever with positive results, never negative back. He was also instrumental in working with Mo. I hooked him up with Mo with the Patterson Police Department, which many of you know about. And Frank is going to hit on that today, too. And, you know, after the break, we're going to talk about the protests because I see our guest today. He went to college in L.A. in the 90s, so I want to see if he feels it's different now than it was then a little bit. And also, he went to Suffolk University Law School in Boston. And he is a Needleman Pisano. It's 29-year law firm, 2A licensing, forfeiture, possession issues, criminal matters, personal injury, municipal court matters, and real estate. He's argued before the New Jersey Supreme Court in ANJRPC versus Jersey City one gun a month ordinance. He's also a boys lacrosse official with the NJSAIA. But the biggest thing is that he's one of the attorneys on retainer on the back page of the ANJRPC/NRA newsletter, where if you're a member, you can call him when it's his rotation for free legal advice for your paltry $40 a year associate membership. But I will tell you, Frank helps everybody. In all my years, I've been referring people to Frank. We hardly ever talk, Sandy, because there's never anything to talk about. People come in, I think I need a six sponge. I got rejected. I go, call Frank Pisano, tell him Anthony sent you. And I never hear anything again until the customer comes in and goes, holy shit, he saved my ass. I did this. I got that. But Frank and I never get to talk. I just keep referring people to him. So without further ado, Frank Pisano from FrankPisanoLaw.com on our show for the entire hour. Welcome, counselor.
Hey, great to be here. And I'm sorry, we need to talk more, I think. I always tell people after I take care of them, tell Anthony I hooked you up.
Yeah, I get the feedback all the time, you know, because Frank is going to talk about this today. Too many times people fill out the application and fill out something wrong or forgot to mention that they had a juvenile record or a divorce thing that was a TRO or whatever, and they put the paperwork in, and then either they get rejected or they get the phone call from the police department like, you know, we need a letter, and that's when Frank gets involved. So, Frank, talk to us about the whole process and helping people and what advice you could give for people that have a question.
Well, first of all, for the ANJRPC members, you know, you're free to call me at any time and ask me short questions, and I'll do whatever I can to answer those. And for those of you who are not ANJRPC members, and I believe that you all should be here in New Jersey, you know, you could just give me a call or shoot me an email and let me know briefly what the issue is. And I'd be more than happy to talk to you for a few minutes, you know, just free of charge, whatever. We'll just talk on the phone. And then what I like to do is figure it out from there. Oftentimes what I'll do is I'll give someone instructions like, you know, hey, if you're not sure whether you're voluntarily committed or not, you know, go to your county adjuster's office and I tell them how to do that. And that way they can rule out or rule in whether they were committed and then call me back. And from there, usually they'll email me the documentation that says either yes, you've been committed, or no, you haven't. And then once I have docs in front of me, I read them, and we usually meet in person, sometimes telephonically, because I work all across the state of New Jersey. So that's like an example. And I'm not like a doctor where I'm going to like charge you. I mean, if you got to call me and give me a quick question, I don't mind taking a few minutes out of my day to call you back and answer it, because it's how I make my, it's how I do business. I don't really advertise, right?
No.
Anthony, and it's like Anthony and ANJRPC and word of mouth is how I do my business. And Gun for Hire sends me a ton of people. And usually I'm able to help them. Almost always I'm able to help them.
Oh, but without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And as Anthony said, you know, sometimes prophylactically, if you will, it's better to just, you know, give me a quick call and try to figure things out before you hit send, because sometimes that creates an issue as well. So it's, I always like to say when I'm doing these talks, when it comes to gun law, I like to wear suspenders and a belt, because I never want to get caught with my pants down in this state. And you know, give me a quick call, and I'll be more than happy to talk to you about whatever your issue is.
You know, the biggest thing we get, like people with minor records when they were young, and it's like, should I put that down? And I'm like, listen, I am not a lawyer. I can't give legal advice. You have to reach out to Frank, because every situation is different. Plus, you have your finger on the pulse. You've been doing this so long. You know the offending towns. You know the towns that scrutinize more than other towns, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know the judges. Northern New Jersey. I know the judges.
Yeah.
Like Hudson County all the way over to Warren. And down into Somerset and Hunterdon. You know, I don't go much further south than that, but I give advice to people, you know, from way down south. It's another world down there, by the way, down in like Gloucester and stuff. It's more laid back, but sure.
And so the offenders now, like when you have somebody that filled their stuff out already, right, and they get that phone call from the police department, Your first thing advice, if they get a phone call or a letter, because sometimes, you know, guys and girls listening to this show, some police departments will call up or email you and say, we found the conflict. Would you like to redo the question, or would you like to redo your application? And then other departments will just reject it outright. Am I correct, Frank?
You are correct. And it's a sore point for me. Because there's this case. So in my view, what happened is in the early 70s, you know, to the mid 70s, whatever, the gun laws changed in New Jersey. And at that time, I don't think we really had the ANJRPC behind us. We didn't have a coalition behind us. And if you read those cases, you know, the attorney general came in pretty prepared, and they, you know, especially the carry cases like In Re Sicardi, which are no longer really good law because of the Bruin decision. But
correct.
There's this case called State v. Weston, and it's an early case. And one of the many things that the Supreme Court said in that case, our New Jersey Supreme Court said, is that it's a paper investigation. A firearms purchaser identification, pistol purchase permit investigation, it's a paper investigation. They're running your name through databases to see, do you have a domestic violence history? Do you have a driving history that could cause us concern because you're a scofflaw? You know, are you subject to restraining order? Any of these things, right? But when they see something that's strange or may cause them to consider denial, according to State v. Weston, the Supreme Court says it's a paper investigation, and they're supposed to communicate with the applicant and either get them in there face to face or get them on the phone and say, hey, I'm going through the, you know, the paper investigation. There's this charge that I have a question about from, like, you know, 20 years ago. Can you tell me about it? As opposed to just saying, oh, well, this guy's got a hit from 20 years ago for, you know, allegedly shoplifting $500 worth of shit stuff and denying him outright. And then we go to court and we find out, well, no, he didn't shoplift $500 worth of stuff. He was in the car, and he had no idea that it happened, and he didn't have a good lawyer. And you get to the heart of the matter. But to get there, it takes months and months and months and a bunch of money to pay me and everyone else to get lined up. And you would be surprised how many times chiefs do not do this. And it's so annoying to me. So I had a case in Warren County recently. New judge, and basically it was a State v. Weston case. I just asked the chief, and I've asked chiefs, but believe it or not, just recently I asked the chief in Passaic, have you even heard of State v. Weston? Do you know that you're supposed to make the phone call? And the guy looks at me and he goes, no. And I'm like, you're chief of police and you don't have any guidance from State v. Weston? Like, do you read the law at all? And he just stared back at me. And that really upsets me, because our Supreme Court in the 70s, mind you, you know, said, hey, you guys should do this. And nobody's really doing it. There's a few chiefs that do it, but hardly anybody does. And what it ends up doing is it causes a lot of people to get denied who might not otherwise, if they just had an opportunity to meet with the guy or the woman and talk about whatever the issue was.
Unbelievable. And so you apply that a lot, obviously successfully, because it sounds like...
It's a question I ask every time. Have you spoken to the applicant before denial? And almost 9 times out of 10, they'll say, no, I didn't speak to them at all. Or they'll say, I called them and told them why I was denying them. That is not what Weston contemplates. It's not a discussion of, hey, you know, you had 2 DUIs in your 20s and I'm denying you. You know, that's not what Weston is. It should be, hey, you know, 25 years ago you had 2 DUIs. What was going on back then? How are we doing?
We had Judge Kaslow denying people for speeding tickets, you know, speeding tickets. Remember that?
That judge's rationale, and there's even a case on it now, I was in there on one guy, and that judge said, you know, I think it was like he had 6 seatbelt tickets in a row, like 6 years in a row. So once a year for 6 years, he got a seatbelt ticket. The last seatbelt ticket was like 8 years ago. And that judge in Bergen County was giving this dude the hardest time over that, because if you can't obey the laws of the road, what makes you think you can obey the laws of justification to walk around here with a pistol on your hip? And I get that more and more. And if you're interested, I could tell you the aegis of that. I mean, how?
Yeah, please. Yeah. We're all interested. We want to hear it, because we have people out there that are probably reluctant to submit for their carry or their FID card because of stuff like that. Please.
So the thing about the driving history, the one tough thing about a driving history here in New Jersey is it's yours forever. You can't clean that up. But passage of time is a really good disinfectant. So, in other words, you know, if UPS has to bring me your driving history with a hand truck into my office and banker's boxes, you know, that's not good. But
so you've seen that.
I've seen that. Yes. That is not good. My own kid. I printed up my MVC driving history just to show my own child who's, you know, been a licensed driver for less than a year, that his history is already longer than mine.
Oh,
but I get, I know he's got, thank God he's got a good lawyer. He doesn't have any convictions. So you get driving history like that. I mean, 8 years ago, and I'm like, so what ends up happening is this, and the Bruin decision has affected not just our ability to carry in the state of New Jersey lawfully, but to purchase as well. And here's why. What ends up happening, in my view, is that the state of New Jersey was in no way, shape, or form prepared for the United States Supreme Court to just say, hey, you know, your last 35 years of jurisprudence regarding carry permits is now in the toilet, where it should be, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. And you know as well as I that the whole bunch of people that are listening to this broadcast and go to your store and are members of the ANJRPC, they're all waiting for this moment in time, right?
Yes,
and here
sir.
It is. And they just inundate. They run to the police station and they inundate the state of New Jersey with these carry permits. And at the time, and this is a really weird thing, the law was that regardless of what the chief says on your carry permit pre-Bruin, regardless of what the chief says, a judge in the Superior Court is going to look at everything with fresh eyes. 50-cent legal word, they call it de novo, but it's just, you look at everything with a fresh eye, and they decide, even if the chief approves, you can get disapproved. And I've seen that happen a number of times over the years. Rarely did I take a carry permit case, rarely. But what ends up happening is all these dudes and women inundate the police with applications. But these people are shooters, right? They're sports people. So most of the chiefs know these people because they buy and sell guns all the time. Everybody gets bored. They want to try the next new flavor, whatever. And they just do a quick investigation. We don't have to worry about justifiable need. Bing, bang, boom, they're getting carry permits. It still goes up to the state supreme superior court, and judges like the judge in Bergen County and Morris and other judges are now absolutely buried in these reviews. And what was happening is, like, you'd get a call from a judge in a certain county, Bergen perhaps, and the judge would say, hey, I've got a concern about your application. I want you to come in this afternoon on a record.
It was a trap.
I got guys call me. It was the best 2 months, 3 months of my life because I was constantly in court. It was quick turnover. Most of it was BS. But the way the judge in that county runs it is he wouldn't tell you what the reasoning is, what his concern was, because that would be an ex parte communication. So he didn't want to say it just to you. He wanted to say it on the record in front of the state, which, you know, to me, it sounds trappy. And a lot of times it was. And what I was getting by going to court for those couple of months from judges like the judge in Bergen County is that they were getting ticked off that the chiefs were just basically rubber stamping these applications. They weren't doing the deep dive. So they start going through these applications with a fine tooth comb, looking closely at motor vehicle records. And like, you gotta know what you're talking about with motor vehicle records, because you know, you could have three or four violations for, you know, driving while suspended, but maybe you only have one conviction. And they're counting up violations, which is, you know, unfair. And he'll hit you with that. And the other thing that will happen at that point in time is he'd get you on credibility. He'd say, you know, hey, was the sky partly cloudy or partly sunny? And, you know, 1 minute it's partly cloudy. And then in 10 minutes later, you say it's partly sunny. And he's like, oh, wait a minute. I have an issue with your credibility. And by finding issue with the applicant's credibility, what the court does is they insulate their decision. So it's really hard to reverse a decision based on credibility because the appellate division defers to the trial level for determining credibility, because credibility is like a sniff test, right? It's experience. It's looking at some guy. Is he sweaty? Is he squirming? Is his face red? You know, and that's how you insulate the decision. So they were really pissed about that. And apparently, you know, he made an issue of it to the state saying, like, why is this not being done? So now what we have moving forward is no longer are judges the final arbiter. The chief is. So if the chief says yes on a carry permit, you just get it. Chief says no, you can appeal it. But what's happened is they made such a stink about the lack of in-depth investigation at the police department level that now these chiefs are like denying, you know, regular old permits. I mean, I've had two denials in Passaic County just last week for guys who've already had ID cards and possess firearms lawfully and safely for numbers of years. And they changed address within one town, or they changed their prefix from dropping the Mr. John Doe to just John Doe, so their licenses match up. And they're getting denied over stuff that is stale in time. Like, nothing has even changed since the last time a permit is issued. And that extra level of scrutiny is how the Bruin decision in New Jersey trickles down. So now people who would normally, you know, more or less go through the pretty intensive investigation and get the permit, it's being scrutinized at the police department level even more, because they see every permit to purchase or ID card as a potential person who's going to be carrying a firearm in their community.
Mm-hmm. Well, how unfair is that, right? When you think about it, the way they treat us, and the Bruin was quite clear that they're not supposed to go outside of the normal, you know, just approval. It's not supposed to be someone's emotions. And I believe the law and public safety exclusion is going to be thrown out eventually in New Jersey. Do you feel that way, Frank?
Well, I would hope so, but I'm not a politician, you know. I just do what I do. I'm a ham and egger. You know, I just show
but,
up.
But the Supreme Court will have to address this, because we can't have a bureaucrat deciding if you're competent or not. It should be black and white. If you don't have any domestics or felonies or whatever the disqualifiers are, or mental issues, you should be able to get your permit. It shouldn't be somebody, well, I don't feel he should have a gun, you know. And believe it or not, even though you got a couple denials from Passaic County, Patterson has actually been turning permits around faster now.
I noticed.
I think my shaming had a lot to do with it.
It had to do with the pressure that you've been putting up.
And I just, I just had a customer come in from Rochelle Park, and they said that someone sent my radio show to the chief, and they put a different permit officer in charge, and they're turning permits around really fast now. So I love when we make a difference. And that was a big thing we did, Frank, right, with Mo Ramadan with
him
in Patterson. I mean, they raked him over the coals, and you stepped in, and Mo and I were going back and forth. He was freaking out, his daughter is very ill, blah 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 blah, and they took his guns away and everything else, and you got him. The biggest line was put in the court when the officer said that he thought he was a threat. And what did you ask the officer? Why didn't he take his guns away at that time? Right?
Yeah.
Why did you let him go home to get his guns? To paraphrase that or repeat that. I want people to hear. Give us a little background on it, too.
Yeah, so this is what happened with Mo, and I don't want to, breach any attorney-client stuff, but
no,
it's a done deal, and it's open record in court, so I can tell you about what happened in court. And what happened in court was that there is an older detective who I've worked with pretty much my whole career out of Patterson. Very slow, very old school Patterson cop. And like what he would do, in my view, is he just was so slow that people would be anxious and they want their rights fulfilled and they don't understand. And they, you keep calling this guy up. And I think the more you called him, the further down the pile you went.
Yeah.
And then, you commit the holiest of holy fouls, which is you get so frustrated that you get angry with the guy. And then he tells you, you don't have the right comportment to own firearms. I'm denying you because you're yelling at me because I haven't done my job for the last 12 months. And then he got a partner, a new guy. And the new guy is the one who dealt with Mo. And, Mo is a guy, type A personality. You might as well return his call right away because if you don't, he's going to be calling you, in 25 minutes. And I figured him out real quick, and I know how to, take care of my people. So I figured him out, but, Mo just wasn't having it, and he thought he was doing the right thing. So, he went to his local political representative and said, hey, I feel like I'm getting slow-rolled, and there's no reason for it whatsoever. And that was all it really took to, upset the Patterson Police Department and those in charge of the ID process, because all of a sudden now they got politicians calling the chief saying what is going on, and so they go ahead and deny him, and then they set him up and they bring him in, tell him to bring his gun with them, and they bring him in and they read him his Miranda rights.
Oh my God.
So they put him in the box. They literally put him in, I talk about State v. Weston. State v. Weston, the Supreme Court in State v. Weston did not anticipate putting some guy in a hot box in a Patterson PD and reading him his rights before you start having a conversation with him about his application, right? It was not, they weren't thinking about that, but that's what they did to Mo. And like anybody, in that position, he's never been in trouble. But he's smart enough to know that he's in the hot box now, and they're reading him his rights. He's like, why are you reading me my rights? Am I in custody, right? Because you only get your rights read to you if it's a custodial interrogation. So they can ask you questions technically, not in every scenario, but generally speaking, the police can ask you questions if you're not in custody without reading your Miranda. It's only a custodial interrogation. So as far as this poor guy is at this point, he thinks he's in custody. And he's like, why am I in custody? What have I done? So they give him a hard time. But I think at the end of the day, right, they give him back his gun, his handgun. I don't remember. It was a purchase permit. I can't remember. But they made him bring something in. They bring his firearm in.
They made him bring his gun, and they said they wanted to check the serial numbers.
Yeah.
Going to seize the gun.
Yeah,
and they were probably going to seize the gun, right? But they decided not to.
In midstream,
and they let him go home. Right.
In midstream, they decide not to because Mo freaks out, and immediately is like, why are you reading me my Miranda rights? He's like, I want to go home. And they said, so they had to say that you're free to go. And because he didn't give himself up and he freaked out, they couldn't keep his gun. So they gave his gun back to him and he walks home with it. And they go back to his house like 3 hours later. He's got family over, and these two police officers from Patterson, the old guy and the new guy, they come and they end up taking his stuff from him. And he says, and this is on body worn camera, he says to the old guy, all right, well, you'll be hearing from my attorney. And he says, my attorney's name is Frank Pisano. And if you look at this guy's face, it's like, oh shit, here we go. Because I've been dancing around the courtroom with this guy since the beginning of my career. So he doesn't even, the older police officer, the grizzled vet will say, he doesn't show up because he's at the range. You know, like, this guy disappears to the range for 3 months at a time.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't he processing applications? Oh, he's doing training at the range. I'm like, well, what? Like,
does he suck that much?
I mean, I think he trains the other cops is the idea, but, you know, everyone else in the world multitasks, right? You know, especially civil servants. I mean, you should see the new presiding criminal judge and how hard that guy works in Passaic County. It's insane. But this guy, he goes to the range, he disappears. So he's the new guy came in, and he just did not do well on cross-examination. I don't know. I do so many of these. But my favorite part about Mo's case, though, was when I had the new guy in the stand. I can't remember what I was asking him, but I was making a fool of him. And I cussed my cousin Vinny'd him. I'm like, it's okay. You could say it. We already know the answer. You could just say it out loud. And so I got, you know, I'm a pretty mellow dude. I try not to be adversarial necessarily in permit cases. I try to like convince the state that I'm right. And that used to really work quite a bit, and nowadays it doesn't, because even if the state agrees with me, we still have to do a full-blown plenary hearing, and the judge will try to disagree with me. But yeah, that's the Mo story, and my favorite part of that, I listened to the audio, and my favorite part of that was when I mic'd Cousin Vinny, that guy. I'm like, that's okay, you can say it.
I listened to the audio like 25 times, Frank.
Yeah, that was Judge Capasoa. That was Judge Cap. And he was a great firearms. Passaic County, believe it or not, has been really blessed with some good judges, I will say. Like, Chris Christie, when he was the U.S. attorney, you know, obviously a real estate attorney in charge of, you know, the largest budget federal criminal investigatory arm of the state, right? But I'll tell you, he had great people working for him, and he did a bang-up job with his AUSAs. And what he ends up doing is he goes and gets put in the governor's seat. And as governor, he put in a bunch of AUSAs who were just top-notch lawyers and fair to us on the bench for the most part. And in Passaic, especially Judge Cap, he was super fair, down-the-middle guy, you know, realistic, understood, you know, the inherent danger, while also understanding that there's no need to get our panties bunched up about it. And I love the guy. He retired. There's a new guy in there, and he's super fastidious dude, works very, very hard, and he's trying hard to run the gun counter. Like, I think when the new judge inherited the position from Cap, he didn't quite understand the ins and outs of what it would take. And the reason I say that is, like, we showed up for his first gun calendar, and there were 10 attorneys in his chambers for a one-day gun calendar. And there's some big, you know, there's some quote-unquote heavy hitters there, you know, me and Lewis and some other guys. And we're all like, dude, you're going to get through two of these today, not 10 of us. And he basically sent everybody home, and there was a transition period where he's trying to figure it out. But now he's figured it out. And, you know, he's really clear with what he likes. And Passaic County Prosecutor's Office has him down. They give him what he wants. I get my exhibits in advance. So, like, Passaic County is a pretty good county to work in right now, and that presiding judge has another degree in engineering. And so, like, his courtroom as a presiding criminal judge is like a technology lab. Like, they have, it's amazing. They have cameras in there. I like to get off my butt and move around. Even though it's a plenary hearing and there's no jury to keep entertained, I still like to move around. And as I'm moving around, all the cameras in the courtroom follow me automatically.
Oh, shit.
So, weirdest thing. But
I'll
Go ahead, Frank. He's fair. This guy is fair.
Yeah.
He's figuring out how to run the calendar correctly. So I don't really have any beef.
That's all I've been hearing. I've been hearing positive, objective stuff about the new judge, so which is great to take over for Capicella in that vein. I think it's really, really good for us.
As compared to Bergen, right?
Oh, yeah. Are we ready for a break?
Yes, we are.
All right, let me do some housekeeping. So if you want to contact Frank, there's a couple of ways you could contact him. You could go and become a member of the ANJRPC, get the newsletter, and in the back page. You should be already. The back page of the ANJRPC News and Briefs, you'll see Frank's contact info. But otherwise, get your pen out right now. It's Frank Pisano, P-I-S-A-N-O, law.com. FrankPisanoLaw.com. Very important. To support those who support you, remember, tell them Gun for Hire sent you. When in doubt, ask an attorney. When I get the people that call, that pulled the trigger before they called an attorney for advice, it's going to cost you more money and it's going to be a lot more work and you might not get what you were looking for. But if you contact Frank first, there's a good chance he'll guide you properly. Remember, if you live in anywhere in New York, New York State, New York City, your legal defense fund company is MY Tac Defense. If you live in 49 other states, it's uslawshield.com. If you want Decoding Firearms by John Petrolino or Crime Proof by Anthony Calandro, it's available here, Amazon, Kindle. It's available at Aberdeen Guns. It's also available in a couple other places we're going to discuss further down the road. My doctor is Optimal Health Wellness NJ, Optimal Health Wellness NJ, concierge medicine for a couple of $100 a month, no more doctor's offices. You're going to be dealing with a doctor that has less than 200 patients, and it is truly concierge medicine. Unbelievable. The next thing is, don't forget to follow news2a.com. I would imagine, Frank, they're going to be reaching out to you. They're probably going to want to have some info from you and run a thing on their media.
All right.
Sure. The Varsity Firearms Podcast with John Valenti. Make sure you listen, like, follow, and share. And if you want to redo your firearms ID card and carry permit, et cetera, check out njlibertycards.com. njlibertycards.com. It's a laminated, a real plastic printed out card, guaranteed 24-hour turnaround. And just mention to Chad that Gun for Hire sent you. A couple other things, you know, talking about standstrong.biz, Frank's firm is on standstrong.biz. I put him on there during COVID when we were locked down. But a member comes in the range the other day, Juan Marte from Old Tepan. Him and his wife went for dinner at Iacchetti's Kitchen in Glen Rock because they hear it all the time on Gun for Hire Radio. And they said John Iacchetti and the food was phenomenal. And while they were there, they inquired, one of their family members wanted to have either a wedding shower or a baby shower. The date was available. They booked it with Iacchetti's Kitchen, and they had it there. And Juan came in and said it was an amazing time. That's one of the reasons why I love this, you know, this community so much, is that we stick together and we support each other. And it's so important that we do that. And a couple other things. We got a new company on standstrong.biz in Somerset County. I believe it's in Somerville. We have another people opened up a gun store, and it's Lauren and Eric, and I can't find their biz, High Caliber Firearms in Somerset County. They were at the dinner with Sandy Hickerson, and you can get Crime Proof there, and you can also get Decoding Firearms by John Petrolino. We have signed copies down there. So another new gun store that had a fight, another lawyer, they had to hire Dan Schmutter to fight to get open because they were fought tooth and nail. Sandy Hickerson wanted to correct it. John Acapinti did not donate a $100 gift card for his landscaping business 3 hours away from the dinner. He donated $100. So now I have to do something with John Acapinti and Sandy with the dinner because I opened my mouth. But we all know that happens anyway. So while we're doing a Glock match on Wednesday night, we had about 60, 65 people here from the Glock match. And the head chef for the Brownstone, Frank, was here. And he's like, man, I wish you could do the Glock matches all the time on Wednesday nights because I'm the head chef at the Brownstone. I know Frank 20 years. I'm the head chef at the Brownstone, and Wednesday night's my only weeknight off. So I looked up. I said, Phoebe, can we do the Glock matches on Wednesday night from now on? She said, sure. I looked over at Frank. I said, will you bring a tray of short ribs and homemade pinoli cookies every time we have a Glock match? He said, sure. So now we are having Glock matches only on Wednesday night. Okay? That's all legal, right, Frank? There was no extortion there or anything.
No.
Okay,
no.
All right.
This is a suggestion.
Yeah. And so John Acapinti gave us an update on his dinner. And, I mean, he's just getting all of the Patrick Murray from PJM & Sons got a premium table. Laszlo from Monster Coatings was doing an eight-hour job, caught up on the radio shows. He's donating a $3,000 or so flooring job. He's also buying a table. Juan in my gun store is building a custom AR-15, I believe, that's going to be used to raffle off at the dinner. Gun for Hire is donating that. Their tricky tray, they got donors like from NJ Liberty Cards donated. And Sam from the Hat Mat is donating custom-made mats. There's going to be a ton of door prizes, et cetera, et cetera. This is going to be an unbelievable show. Joe Shivo is donating stuff from the Shepherd and the Knucklehead in Hoboken. I don't even know what that is, but I need to find out, especially if it's food. It's a bar and grill. Yeah, so now I have to go and see what's going on there. So it's going to be huge. If you want to donate, if you want to buy tickets, if you want to buy raffle tickets, fonranj@gmail.com. John Acapinti will gladly take your donations. Again, I'm going to be deeply shaming people that don't donate. So speaking of food-related stuff, the other day I'm standing in the range and I see this lovely woman come walking in solo with a gun and she asks for a waiver to fill out, right? So, of course, I go up to him and say, hey, you're new to the place. He says, oh, I'm waiting to meet my brother here. He's a member. He comes all the time. Oh, nice to meet you. Her name is Alicia. So we start talking. So then when the brother comes in, he goes, by the way, my sister, her business is on standstrong.biz. And the business is, Sandy, this is for you. Her business is Isabella's Cakery.
Ooh.
And she's available through Etsy and Facebook. And she makes cakes, cookies, and breads, specialty items, birthday, wedding, anniversary, local delivery available. Sorry, Sandy.
Does she ship to Alabama?
It's Isabella's Bakery. Alicia, do you ship to Alabama? So anyway, it's Isabella's Cakery, and it's on Etsy and Facebook. And you might have to bring samples the next time you come in, Isabella. I like really thin oatmeal raisin cookies or chocolate chip cookies with walnuts. Not that I'm extorting you or anything. Not I'm just all. Saying.
Just a right? suggestion.
Now back to Frank Pisano. And Frank, your office is in Montville, right?
Yeah, Morris County.
Yeah, Morris County. But Frank, like he said, he handles mostly all of northern New Jersey. Now, Frank, I believe Americans have a right to self-defense, even when the government favors the illegals and the criminals over the law-abiding citizens, right? I believe we have a right to self-defense. I also believe we have a right to peaceful protest. It's in the Constitution. But what we're seeing going on in the universities right now are not peaceful protests. And I've been talking about this since the Occupy Wall Street thing. The best way to clean this scum up is water cannons with 90% water, 10% bleach. And you just blow all that shit out and you just clean it up and you'll never.
And it's like a sanitizer.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly what I'm saying. But I see on your bio that you went to Occidental College in L.A. in 1990. Give us some insight on what you're feeling and seeing what's happening to our country right now and the hotbed of indoctrination in our universities, in our high schools, in our middle schools. And then we'll get back to the legal stuff.
Sure. So this is like one of the anomalous parts of me and my being a person. So I went to Occidental College, which is a liberal arts college in Los Angeles, basically because I really didn't apply to the right schools, and my parents were panicking. And so, truth be told, Occidental College is like the only one that didn't waitlist me. They took me, so I went. Sight unseen, I went. I didn't even know what a liberal arts college was. I wanted to go to business school. First day in there, you know, they have the, you know, departmental meetings, and you can figure out if you know which departments you're interested in. So I go to the economics department meeting, and the place is full. There's got to be 300-400 kids in there. First thing this dude says is, if you're here because you think this is the closest thing to a business major you can get at this college, you're making a mistake. And I stood up. I stood up and I walked out. I was the only kid. I stood up and I walked out. So I'm walking down the hallway. I'm like, I'm in Los Angeles. I'm 3,600 miles from home. What now? I didn't even bring a pillow. I didn't know how to bring a pillow. So I walk past this little teeny office, and there's this like cherubic, angelic little old man sitting cross-legged on a desk, and it says philosophy on the door. And I had read, my English teacher in high school was into like Lord of the Flies and philosophical aspects of literature, Heart of Darkness stuff. And so I said, all right, let me give this one a whirl. I sit in there, and all this guy talks about is the party that they throw in the fall and wine. And I look around, and there's a bunch of, you know, a handful of hot chicks in there. I'm like, boom, I'm a philosophy major. and that's how it went. Now, in the 90s, like, I don't remember like big campus protests in the 90s, even at my school. There really weren't, we didn't really have a big voice, and we were kind of in between like the 60s, 70s, early 70s protests. And, you know, I don't remember it being like weird. LA when I was there was definitely a police state. I mean, they were, you know, Rodney King and people left and right. And Rodney King was the tip of the iceberg. They had like, you know, Fruit of Islam guys getting in shootouts with the cops. Cops shooting blindly into liquors. This cop in my neighborhood shot, like, chasing some perpetrator allegedly, and shot blindly into a liquor store. And like, not only did he, you know, break a bunch of bottles of liquor, but he shot some poor bastard in there. And that's like, I couldn't wait to get out of L.A. And now, you know, now what I'm seeing
sounds like a normal day in New York City.
Yeah, what I'm seeing today is confusing to me. One of the cool things, you know, that Anthony mentioned is the right to self-protection, right? The right to self-defense. Yeah. And the coolest thing about the Second Amendment, in my view, and I think of all the amendments, because a lot of the amendments are like, you know, everybody's got a big, you know, stone in their shoe over King George and the way he was treating us. But the coolest thing about the Second Amendment is, it didn't create the right to keep and bear arms. It recognized the God-given pre-existing right.
Yeah.
If you research it, it does not create the right. It simply recognizes it. And, you know, I think that holds true today. I think that as human beings, we have the right to self-defense. Now, what's going on in these campuses, I think, you know, I don't really follow it closely, but I find it extremely disturbing. Because, like, I have a pretty good eye for the future, you know, and like, I saw January 6th coming. I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be a problem, and it turned out to be. And then I was watching the news last week, and I'm thinking to myself, like, are these college kids, or is this some kind of outside agitation? Mm. And I think that's part of the stuff that we have to deal with nowadays, and it's terrifying.
You know, well, when again, you open the borders and you let in, you know, millions of people, you have no idea, first, what type of diseases they're bringing in. And secondly, what type of mindsets they're bringing in and what purposes they're coming here for. You wind up with this type of thing where you have 50-year-old and 40-year-old agitators at college campuses.
And the professors.
Yeah.
You know, but I've been to D.C., I've been to Trenton, I've been to Point Pleasant for lockdown, you know, during COVID or whatever. And all of us on the right, I mean, Rob Bermudez, when we had a thing in Trenton, he brought garbage bags, and everybody, like, cleaned up. We left it cleaner. We didn't destroy property. We didn't spray paint. We didn't harass people walking by. We attacked the political elites, right? We yelled, and we went up, and we rallied, and we made noise and stuff, but we didn't block traffic. We didn't block people from going to work or anything. This is unacceptable. You have to have norms. You have to have law and order in your country. And to turn a blind eye on the people because they lean left and the media facilitates this, it's just going to get worse and worse. I mean, these kids, listen, protest all you want. I don't agree. I'm not anti-Semitic, but you know, people have a right to protest it in that aspect in this country, right? The First Amendment guarantees that. But hate speech to one person is not hate speech to another person, obviously. But the tolerance level, you can't build an encampment and stop Jewish kids or other kids from entering a campus and learning where their parents are. We, the people, are paying $80,000 or $90,000 a year, you know, forgiving their loans or whatever it may be. So. I'm telling you, it's just a scary time. And then I feel bad for the police officers now today going in to clean the mess up because they're all going to get sued. Excessive force, et cetera, et cetera, even if it's on body cam. I don't know. It's just a crazy world. But you know what? Suck it up and get jobs. That's basically what's going to start contributing to this country. I'm tired of our political class on both sides. It's all theater. You know, yep, let's face it, it's all theater. Yeah. Nobody represents us anymore. It's just theater. I don't give a shit about any of them. I just care about me, my family, and my unit of my 2A patriotic people that I'm surrounded by, unfortunately. And it's a shame that we're at that point. Frank, you know, back you know, to you with that high note.
Yeah. No, I have a thought. You know, so I'm a high school boys lacrosse official. And, you know, parents sometimes are not the best. They don't understand the game. And, you know, sometimes I even make mistakes. But, you know, I call the kid on a slash or something the other night. And this parent from the top of the bleachers is screaming at me that I'm soft. I'm soft. And I want to say to this guy, like, look, man, the only weird thing about being an official is, like, you're the police officer and the judge all wrapped up in one. But I'm not soft. I'm enforcing the rule, right? So that if I don't enforce that rule, the next time the kid's going to whack him harder or twice or in a worse place, right? Things spin out of hand. So, like, I'm watching these campus revolts, especially Columbia. And, like, Columbia, again, I'm a student of history because I went to a liberal arts school. So I'm a student of history. And, you know, Columbia, back in the day, you know, it was a hotbed of serious protestation over the Vietnam War and various other things. And they took over buildings and there were agitators there as well. But my thing is this, like, they're shutting campuses down, making this virtual and so on and so forth. Like, why aren't these students being expelled, like, on the spot?
Right. Not like, suspended, on the spot. Expelled.
Not suspend, expelled.
Yeah. Expelled.
On the spot. Pack your shit and go leave now.
Go home. We'll send you a check for the balance of your tuition. Right. That's the one thing that really boggles my mind, is that they allowed that to snowball to the point, and I think they should have been enforcing the campus laws right away, because like I said with lacrosse, if you let one slip, it's going to snowball. It's going to exponentially, yep. It'll be a J-shaped curve of rule breaking. Mm-hmm. And I think they should have started expelling kids from that Ivy League institution left and right in the beginning when they started, you know, one warning, do what we say or you're off campus forever.
Right.
And they still aren't doing that.
No, they're not.
You know, set up your protest in the middle of the green or the mall and just stay there. Bring a porta potty or whatever. But when you're blocking other kids from school and you're saying racial epithets, and that's it. It's done. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah. And wearing headbands for a terrorist organization.
Hamas
headbands. That is like they're wearing headbands from a terrorist organization. I mean, look, kids are kids, right? I probably had some crazy, stupid views. Like, all right, put it this way. My dad, as I got older, miraculously, my dad got smarter and smarter. He was a complete he was a complete idiot when I was in college. That guy didn't know shit. And all of a sudden, I'm in my 50s, and the guy's a genius. And,
yep.
And,
right.
And so, you know, kids are kids. But again, you can't, in my view, you can't let it slide, man. You got to enforce the rules. And I know there's a tough balance between free speech and you know, being able to gather for public protests. But if you're not following the rules and you're wearing accoutrement of a terrorist organization that, like, basically, yep, those people would kill all of us if they had a chance.
Especially the people wearing the headbands.
Leeway would we be giving? Would we be given if it was a pro-gun protest?
Oh, good God.
None. None. Yeah. Okay? None. So every time we've had gone down to Trenton, we've had a nice state police escort with us the entire time, watching everything we do, guarding the doors. They don't, not, you know. So anyway,
doors at porta potty 4 blocks away.
That's because we're not educating anymore. We're indoctrinating, and higher education. That's why you see more of these young kids now are going for trade schools and stuff, which I think is a good thing.
Which they should
in this country.
We need more friggin' plumbers and carpenters.
Yes.
And we need
welders.
For years, though, people look down upon, those jobs. That's for stupid people, and which we know now it's not right.
Well, let me
higher education's not the answer for everybody.
Down here, I'm on the Alabama coast here, and in the Port of Mobile, there's one of the largest shipbuilding companies in the world, Austal, and they for a welder, and they're training people here. They're building massive schools to train trades, because the average compensation for a welder right now is about $170,000 a year.
Oh, God bless.
So,
Frank, I go back and forth between New Jersey and the west coast of Florida, and Sandy is living full-time now in the shores, the Gulf Shores of Alabama, if you didn't know that. But Sandy, we got big news for Sandy down there. John DeCase, one of our instructors here, who was our first DEI hire. That's an inside joke, by the way. He sent me an email. It's a big thing, Frank. Sandy has a Wawa near his house in Alabama now. The first one in Alabama. Shit.
Let me tell you, there's still lines waiting to get in. These poor bastards down here have no idea what a Wawa is, right? By the time the Wawa opened, the mayor came up to me and she said, "We're getting a Wawa." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." So she goes, it's kind of like a Bucky's, only smaller. And I'm like, no, it's not. it's a fucking 7-Eleven. You see your Circle K over here? It's that with sub sandwiches. That's it. Yeah. That's all it is.
Too funny.
Unbelievable. Too funny.
So Frank, I know your days are very, very busy, because we never talk, Frank. The last time I saw you personally, besides the VIP event I invited you to, the last time I saw you personally before that was at an NRA convention thing. We were on a tour bus going somewhere.
In Phoenix.
Oh, my God. That's the last time they had an NRA annual meeting in Phoenix, because it got too big. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
It's not long ago. Holy moly. So Frank, some more advice for people. They're reading the forms, they're filling the forms out. What are other things people should reach out to you if they're questioning before they submit the paperwork to run past you? Any other tips?
Yeah, please. Yeah. I definitely. In this one, I've seen people step on their tail quite a bit with. And it's the question that, have you ever been attended or treated by a doctor or psychologist for any mental health care issues? No. All right, so that one is a big deal. Because a lot of people end up shooting their mouth off and answering incorrectly. So first of all, the application says doctor or psychiatrist. So I just want to be abundantly clear with everybody in case we don't know this. Psychiatrists are doctors. They're medical doctors.
Right.
So, I don't know what that means. I guess what they meant is doctor of psychology, or, a psychology doctorate. But if you're not seeing a psychologist with a PhD, psychologist, or an MD, then you answer no to that question. If you're going to see a marriage counselor because, shit's hitting the fan at home with you and the wife, and you go to a licensed social worker or a therapist, you don't answer yes to that question. Only if you're seeing, first thing I ask, are you being prescribed meds? And if they say no, then I say, well, why not? Because usually that means it's not a doctor. It's a licensed social worker, a therapist. So I've seen a bunch of guys open the door that should not be opened because they incorrectly answer that question. They're seeing a therapist, not a doctor. That's
a big
one.
See why I refer everybody to Frank?
Yeah.
You see why? And most of the people that I refer to Frank already submitted the paperwork with the question filled out. Yes.
Right, right. And they shoot themselves in the foot because they don't seek. It is the same story over and over and over again. Seek counsel before you act, and you'll be better off.
And like, I'll talk to people briefly. It's how I make rain. You know what I mean? So if I take a phone call, and first thing I'll do is I ask, where are you coming from? And it's 9 times out of 10, it's Anthony Guns for Hire. And then I talk to him, and I get more cases out of Gun for Hire referrals than I do from ANJRPC. My ANJRPC referrals are like the most esoteric questions you could ever think of. And I end up just cringing. Like, I have to look shit up. I have to, like, let me call you back. My Gun for Hire referrals are like, look, man, I think I was committed. I'm not sure. I'm like, well, you're not sure you were committed? Like, how can you not be sure?
You still hear those voices.
Yeah. Look, like I said, like, when you went to the hospital, did a door open automatically, and then you went into a little room, and then that door shut before the other door opened?
Did they take your belt and shoelaces?
Did you enter the hospital through a sally port? Because if you entered the hospital through a sally port, chances are you were committed.
Yeah.
But then you get guys like sometimes they'll go for detox, right? And 9 times out of 10, if you look carefully at the detox program, it's not a yes answer to have you ever been committed. But if you have a question, was I voluntarily, because most of your commitments, everybody figures out they're committed. The voluntary admits are a little hybrid, you know, where you go in voluntarily and then they screen you and you're not brought there by the police or whatever. And then they screen you and they say, hey, we think you should stay. And then you say, okay. Or if you say no, then they're going to say, okay, well, maybe we're going to put you on a 72-hour hold. But the best way to figure out whether you've been committed or voluntarily admitted, to answer that question on the ID, is to go to the county adjuster's office in the county within which you lived at the time of the hospitalization and ask them the procedure to get your records of commitment, if any. Because the county adjuster's office is the gatekeeper of commitment records. They're the ones who flow commitment records from hospitals and county organizations governmentally to the state police, to NICS federal database. So the best way to determine whether or not you actually were committed is to just go to the adjuster's office in advance and ask them what you need to do. And they're going to either give you your commitment records, and then you call me and we can clean that up. In 9 times out of 10, we can clean that up. Or they're going to say you were never committed, so you can answer no to that question. You don't want to open doors.
Correct. And that's what I tell people all the time. You just don't. It's too late now, but let's see if Frank can fix it. And that question is ambiguous, right, Frank? Many people have gotten in trouble by reading that question wrong.
People, you know what they end up doing is they end up volunteering information that is non-responsive to the question, but is going to open up the door, which is crazy too, because one of the things that it does is, first of all, it stigmatizes mental illness. Like, there are probably people listening to this broadcast right now who may have situational depression or what have you that is completely fixable with a little bit of medicine and a little bit of work, and they're not going to get that help because they're going to be stigmatized by it.
Yep.
And I see it constantly where you know, people have situational depression. They're, you know, going through a divorce or whatever, and shit's hitting the fan, and they go and they get help, and they get a little antidepressant in them, and then they wean off of it or whatever. Or people who have depression. Like, there's nothing to say you can't have depression and safely own a firearm. You know what I mean? But you know what happens? What kind of medicine are you taking? Oh, okay, you're taking that and you feel great. What happens if you stop taking it? And doctors have a really hard time answering that question. They'll, because it's speculation what's going to happen.
Right.
So they'll say, well, this person has been compliant with treatment. He's always showed up on time. He's always taken his meds per prescription. And they'll still say, well, I don't know. If he stops taking his medicine. Now, you know, somebody with situational depression, I don't know that that necessarily works. Now, clearly, you know, I've seen guys, you know, pooping on the street and wiping their butts with their hats, mumbling to themselves. And, you know, they're clearly paranoid schizophrenics. And what happens with that kind of mental illness is once you medicate.
Run for the White House at that point.
Yeah. And once you're medicated, you're like, you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror. You're like, hey, I'm right as rain. You know, I'm not pooping in. I don't hear voices. I'm not pooping in the street anymore. And they stop taking the medicine. And then 2 weeks later, they decompress and they're in the same boat. So it's just, you have to be really smart how you answer these questions, because they stigmatize it. And I mean, if you want to stigmatize mental illness, you know, probably half the police in the state would be riding the bench.
Very true. Very, very true.
You know, the stigma with mental illness prevents so many people from getting help. And all my years, over 30 years doing this, people come in and go, oh, no, I lost my job and my wife and my kid and my divorce and this and that. And they're like, I'm afraid to go get help because I don't want to lose the guns. And I pull them aside and I'm like, listen, your health comes first.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, if you're feeling bad, your health comes first. You got to address that first. The guns, we can always handle that later, but you got to go get help, you know. Yep. And that's how I refer people all the time, because I don't want to see somebody hurt themselves or, you know, somebody else or whatever, when it's preventable. And it is a shame that we have that stigma, Frank, that people can't go out and get it. You know, if you're diabetic or you have a heart disease, you could take a pill and you're okay and you can still own guns, right? Meanwhile, we're focusing on what prescription they're taking. I could be drinking a fifth of vodka every night and I'd still be able to own a gun, right? Yeah. I could be drunk driving and I can still be carrying a gun.
Right.
Yeah.
And, right.
I had a bright side. This is crazy. I know this is crazy, but listen to this. A very urban county in New Jersey, one of the most urban counties in New Jersey. Last week, I was in there on a case, and it was some kind of, the guy was in therapy, but not, it was basically what we're talking about. And the prosecutor basically rolled and said, you know what, judge, I'll leave it to the court to decide. You know, I've been in therapy. I don't see any, you know, I swear to God, this guy said that.
Wow. Well, almost, that is phenomenal. That's great.
And the guy got his permit.
Good. See?
So
there is help. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
There is. Like, not everybody is, like, there's law enforcement, right? But in my view, so for me personally, no offense, I've got a lot of friends who are police officers, and I know it's a job where, you know, any given moment you can lose your life in the line of duty, even when you least expect it. So I get that aspect of it. But for me, the biggest beef I have is directly with law enforcement and how they do the permitting and how they treat people. You know, the judiciary, there are some judges that we're well aware of, especially in Bergen, that are very finicky. Very good lawyer, very excellent lawyer, this guy, but finicky. Letter of the law man. But, you know, even that judge, right, even that guy, I know this guy. I've appeared in front of him since the first day he was on the bench. And he's a letter of the law guy. Like, I've seen him give a permit to a guy because the state only presented hearsay. And he got reversed in this case called In the Matter of MU, which is a recent case where the appellate division is finally trying to give guidance to the trial level on how to deal with these permitting issues. He got reversed, and he's like all of a sudden very sensitive to it. And like, he's like, do you have any witnesses? And I'm like, yeah. But like, for him to ask that, he's signaling to me that he's already made his decision. So I kind of feel him out, and he basically says, well, the state's case is entirely hearsay, and while I'm allowed to entertain hearsay because the rules of evidence are relaxed in this hearing, they can't base their case entirely on hearsay, and he issued the permit without even really hearing from my guy. And that is the most finicky guy on the bench there is, but, I mean, I look at him as just, he's a really good lawyer, and I'm pretty sure I know what his feelings are about the Second Amendment, but in the same sense, as much as he uses the letter of the law to prevent people in any way, shape, or form from getting their permit, he at least holds the state to the same burden most of the time.
That's good. That's good to hear.
It's okay.
I've never heard that aspect.
Yeah, it's a once in a lifetime once in a lifetime case for me. Like the prosecutor in that urban county basically saying to the judge, like, I've benefited from therapy. I'm not going to hold it against this guy. That's a once-in-a-lifetime moment for me, 30 years doing this, 29 and a half years doing this, and that particular judge in Bergen County, you know, giving me a win because of the letter of the law, to me, just is like one of those moments in time where you're like, holy cow.
Wow. Steve, yeah. Do you have anything else for Frank?
I do not. It's just been an absolute pleasure.
Frank, you were nervous going in on this morning and or last night when we talked, and let me tell you something, unbelievable amount of information. So I'm going to allow you to plug your firm and your business, and then Sandy's going to take us away.
Yeah, so my name's Frank Pisano. My phone number is 973-334-4422. I have an office here in Montville, and I'll be happy to take anybody's phone call. Just keep it brief. And from that phone call, I can either, you know, spend 5 minutes and get you as a you know, free of charge and walk away with a new client for the rest of our lives. Or I can get your butt in here and we can game plan out how we're going to fix the problem. And my assistant's name is Tracy, and she's awesome. And she knows as much about my clients as I do, sometimes even more. And she deals with my real estate end, so I do real estate as well, personal injury. So that's it, man. This was fun.
Yes, we're going to do this again. Save the headphones.
I'm saving the headphones. I'll come on again. I was a little nervous. I was afraid I wasn't going to have enough to talk about. I was afraid I was going to be like, I don't want to, like, I'm being vague about clients and judges on purpose because I don't know who's listening to this. But everything I said is true.
Nobody listens to this show.
Yeah. Everything I said is true. I don't think I maligned the judiciary. I may have maligned a few police departments, but they have it coming.
They got to fix their shit.
They have it coming, man.
Yeah.
I just can't take it anymore.
Me too.
But it pays my bills.
Killed it.
Thank you so much for being on. Sandy, wrap it up.
Well, it looks like you've done it again. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. Gun for Hire Radio is a Counterfeit Media production. The music used in this broadcast is managed by Cosmo Music, New York, New York. On behalf of our show host, Master Trainer Anthony Colandro, author of Crime Proof, Think Like a Criminal and Beat Them at Their Own Game, which he actually happened to mention this week, is available wherever great books are sold. It is not where shitty books are sold. Thank you again, Mr. Pisano. It is a pleasure to talk to a lawyer who knows how to operate equipment. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
We love you guys from the shadows of the New York City skyline and the beautiful Gulf Shores of Alabama. God willing, Jesus tarries and the batteries hold out. We will see you again next week.